Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Yet another execution in Missouri. It comes as one of the world's best-known anti-death penalty crusaders comes to our area. Sister Helen Prejean joins us in just a couple of moments. But first, 180 degrees in a different direction as Ballpark Village is just hours away from finally becoming a downtown reality. With some stops and starts, the concept has been a development vision since the beginning of this century. Now the village is opening tomorrow, just in time to coincide with the beginning of the 2014 baseball season. It is not exactly the multi-use complex first envisioned adjacent to Busch Stadium, nor is it complete. The first phase, described as a sports bar entertainment complex, is ready to go. Some tenants are signed up for the 100,000-square-foot, $100 million village. And with us to talk about Ballpark Village past, present, and future are William DeWitt III, president of the St. Louis Cardinals. Brett Boyle is coordinator of the Sports Business Program and associate professor of marketing at St. Louis University. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Don.
You too.
Bill, thanks for joining us. Let's get right to the details as to what's going on during this first phase, Bill. What is included in Phase 1?
Well, Phase 1 is, as you said, a $100 million project. There's 110,000, 120,000 square feet. We've cleaned up the whole site surrounding, you know, the 10 acres that we control, and there's a lot of landscaping and everything. And but in the main building, there is several tenants, seven or eight tenants. The three anchor tenants, which I'll talk about, are kind of what most people have been thinking about. Number one is Fox Sports Midwest Live, which is a giant atrium in the middle of the project that is kind of our wow moment when you walk in and see the huge retractable roof up top, glass roof, and giant 35-foot LED screen and lots of room for special events, concerts, and other activities. And then you have Cardinals Nation, which is a concept that the Cardinals are doing, and it's never been done for a sports team. Very exciting because it includes four things all rolled into one. It's a bar and restaurant. It's a store. It's a Hall of Fame and museum. And it's a seating deck with 335 seats that look into the ballpark, and there'll be game day ticketed seating and an associated party room with that. So that's Cardinals Nation. The third big anchor tenant is Budweiser Brewhouse. AB has helped us invested in a great concept that really showcases their international brands now and all of their the look and feel of the brewery architecture and look and feel, and that's also got a seating deck on top, which is fun for viewing games. So those are kind of the big ones and a lot of little ones as well.
How does what you have now and what will be opening tomorrow differ from some of the earlier visions for Ballpark Village?
Well, it's actually a step towards that same vision. In other words, we didn't necessarily, we've got room to expand with future venues that might include office, residential, you know, additional retail or what have you. So the nice thing about this first phase is it plants a flag in the ground. It's obviously the entertainment-driven piece of it, but there are now parcels that are pad-ready for additional, we think, vertical density for those uses that I mentioned before.
But you'd still have a little space in Phase 1 for other tenants if they choose to come in. How much space do you have?
We've only got one spot left. It's 3,500 square feet. We're talking actually to some potential tenants today that are finally walking through the project with us. And we actually could have just done another sports bar, but we didn't want to overdo that. So we wanted to make sure that we had a complementary tenant to what's already there. And so, you know, we just sort of held out so that the buzz and activity of the opening would create a better opportunity for us.
Let me bring Brett Boyle into the conversation. Brett, what do you make of this whole Ballpark Village thing?
Well, I'm very optimistic about the prospects. It's unique to baseball in that, as Bill mentioned, that it's integrated into the stadium. The stadium was built with Ballpark Village in mind. If you look at left field, there's been this gap in the vista of the left field where Now the Ballpark Village rooftop seating will be seen, and folks can be able to view the game from the other side of the street. So in that regard, it's unique. And I also the prospect for folks staying longer than just a game is what's the real attraction. Rather than just coming in for a game and leaving, you could literally make a weekend of a game where somebody might just come in the morning, you know, leave from Cape Girardeau and come in for the game and leave that night. This is going to get folks to come in and stay the night before, maybe get a concert in, get up in the morning and go to the museum, go to the game, go to the Drunken Fish for dinner that night. I mean, it's going to really hold a captive audience of sorts.
Bill, this has always been something that people talk about with regard to our downtown, that being that folks readily come in for the ball games, but as soon as the game is over, they tend to leave, and that's not really good for downtown.
That's right, and it's I do think that's maybe overstated. There's a lot to do downtown, but you know, a good chunk of people do come in and out for the game only, and we hope that'll change on game days. But I think the other point that I'd like to make, building on what Brett said, is that we have a budget. The Ballpark Village project has a very large budget to put on events. So we are going to have these concerts. We're going to have these events outside. There's family days. There's cooking contests. There's events that are centered around the calendar that is largely a TV calendar, which you think about Super Bowl or All-Star Games or March Madness like we're doing now and the Masters coming up, or even things like the Oscars or American Idol finale or something, anything that gets people gathering around a TV. Those events can all be done in this live area with watching the giant TV, and then the concerts and other events, the family days, that's going to bring people downtown that otherwise would not be downtown on non-game days. And I think that's the key to the project. We need to drive traffic. We know 81 games a year we're going to be full. It's all those other days. And that's why there's a big, robust calendar of events to do that.
I think I read somewhere that you've already got 200 events or so signed up and ready to go.
That's right. That's right. It's a very, very busy schedule. And, we were kind of joking that we're probably going to turn away some people tomorrow night in the big free concert grand opening, but there will be no shortage of opportunities to come back as we play out the calendar of events for the coming season starting this Thursday.
I certainly want to talk more about the impact it's going to have downtown, but I also have to bring up the issue of the front page of this morning's Post-Dispatch. The article there with regard to a dress code for the venue, and quite frankly, there were some segments of that story that didn't seem particularly flattering. It almost suggested that certain segments of the population might be targeted, so as not to come to this Ballpark Village.
That's not the case. I mean, the whole point of the Ballpark Village is to have a safe environment. I think the dress code is something that we and Cordish Company, the managing developer and the operator of the venue, has experienced in other venues where it's largely enforced after 9 p.m. when these venues transition towards more of an adult nightclub type of activity. And I think that's not uncommon. In fact, you know, you go to a casino, you're going to have a dress code to go to the evening events. Same thing in a ton of different areas and venues around town. So it's not unlike those. And but we do need to be cognizant of the fact that this whole area has multiple uses and multiple – it wears many hats. And over different – depending on the event, it'll have a different – feel and vibe. And so the dress code is a way to objectively say we're going to enforce when it morphs into more of an adult type of a venue after 9 p.m.
Well, hasn't Cordish run into some difficulty, some legal difficulty at some of their other venues with regard to the American Civil Liberties Union, for instance, coming in and challenging some of these things as perhaps being discriminatory?
Well, we met with them this morning, and we wanted to hear, and I've heard over the years how they've been addressing some of these issues. You know, their venues over the throughout the country have upwards of 50, 60 million people attend them every year, and there have been a couple of incidents that have, you know, flared up, and, you know, the vast majority of people have had great, safe, and you know, environments that nobody has any issue with. They're in a couple of situations where, you know, they can't really comment until things get settled. But, you know, there's certainly no intent to certainly to discriminate or to, you know, to keep anybody out. I mean, we want everybody to come down and enjoy Ballpark Village.
I have to assume this is the last thing you wanted to see on the front page of the paper this morning, the day before the opening.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. I don't think, you know, we had a media day yesterday, and wonderful day showcasing the venue for everybody. All the media were invited. The Post chose not to come for some reason. I don't know why, and just, you know, wrote something quickly based on, you know, about a seven-year-old story in Kansas City.
Uh-huh. Rhett, what do you make of this whole part of the story?
Well, I empathize with Bill's desire to have an environment that families feel safe to be in. I think that's kind of the minimum that you'll want to, the image that you want to express is that, you know, regardless of what's there to do, that it's going to be a safe environment. And in that regard, I can empathize with the developer and the Cardinals for wanting to create that kind of environment.
But coming as it does just prior to the opening, from a marketing standpoint, I wonder what your impression of that impact is.
It's probably not great timing. I can't believe this won't be resolved as it's been in other cities.
But Bill, as you say, you're having discussions with Cordish right now with regard to this and its impact.
Yeah, we're having discussions about all of our operational details, one of which is a code of conduct / dress code aspect. I mean, we've got, we're expecting big crowds as we debut with all of our events, and, you know, we want to make a big splash. So there's, you could imagine, a lot of operational details to work out, and I hope our fans and patrons are a little patient with us, because when you open your doors to something this big, you know, you're bound to, you know, make a mistake or two. But we're very excited. We feel good about it. We're going to we've got everybody trained, and all the restaurant venues are continuing to push and get all the training done. And it's going to be a great week of showcasing this wonderful new venue.
Before I take a break, just one other item I wanted to cover. I believe I read someplace that there's going to also be a cover charge of some sort for some of the various spots inside the village.
For the vast majority of time, there's no cover to get in anywhere. There will be occasions where after 9 p.m. there might be a cover, for example, in the live Fox Sports Midwest live atrium. If there's a band, national act, for example, the one tomorrow is free, but maybe in the future there could be a cover after 9. And it's a way of really essentially whittling down the crowd that might otherwise be too large for the venue.
We have a number of folks have already started calling in. They want to raise a question or a comment with regard to Ballpark Village. We'll bring them in just a moment. But first, I have to take a break. We are talking with Bill DeWitt, who is the kind of the driving force, if you will, from the Cardinals organization behind Ballpark Village, which opens officially tomorrow. Also with me in studio is Brett Boyle, who is a marketing expert. He's with St. Louis University. Welcome back to continue the conversation and take your calls at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. We'd love to hear from you. Back with Bill DeWitt and Brett Boyle in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on Ballpark Village, which has its official opening tomorrow. After all these years of talking about it, we'll continue the conversation with Bill DeWitt of the Cardinals and Brett Boyle of St. Louis University in a moment. But here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Missouri hospitals have eliminated about 1,000 positions and put a hiring freeze on more than 2,100 vacant positions in the past 6 months. That's according to the Missouri Hospital Association, which released the figures today as part of its push to get the state legislature to expand Medicaid coverage for thousands of lower-income adults. A group of Missouri labor unions rallied at the state capitol today against so-called right-to-work proposals, the legislation that prohibits labor contracts from requiring that all employees pay union fees is a top priority of House Republican lenders. And Illinois Governor Pat Quinn is delivering his budget speech at this hour in front of the Illinois House and Senate. He was expected to stay at the state's temporary income tax increase would be made permanent. Lawmakers briefed on the proposal say Quinn would tie the idea to a tax refund for property owners. You can hear more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about Ballpark Village. Bill DeWitt, back to you, and then I'd like, Brett, for you to answer the same question about the potential for Ballpark Village to affect either negatively or positively other businesses downtown, particularly those that would compete in the entertainment area. Bill, I'm sure you've done due diligence on all of this. What do you think?
Well, I think what we're offering is unique. You know, I mean, when you think about the connectivity to the stadium, the seating deck, the Hall of Fame and Museum, these are only things that that the Cardinals can do. And, of course, there's other venues that are going to drive traffic. And I come back to the point I made earlier about the event schedule. We are investing in events that will drive people down here on non-game days. And I think that surrounding businesses will hopefully benefit from some of that spinoff and some of that investment. That you know, we project, obviously, we get $3 million plus at the ballpark every year, and we expect that north of $6 to $7 million will come through Ballpark Village, and a lot of those will be incremental because the project is there. A lot of them are, you know, just adding up to, you know, double counting from stadium, but we believe those incremental events will really drive additional traffic to the extent any of it's taken away during game days from surrounding venues.
And Brett, you indicated earlier you think pretty much along those lines as well.
Right. I'm kind of the opinion that a rising tide raises all boats, that, you know, the downtown area is, in my opinion, a great trajectory in general. And Ballpark Village is just another piece of that equation. I mean, given what's in store for the Arch area, and now Ballpark Village, the improvements to a lot of the loft apartments and folks moving back in. I you know, the improvements that are being made are only going to benefit the downtown region overall.
Have any numbers been put together with regard to the economic impact, Brett, of this project?
I haven't seen any specific numbers, although I from my understanding is that there is a net benefit. Definitely in terms of jobs and in terms of spending in the region.
I have read that there is some speculation that once when people have their initial involvement with Ballpark Village, they're likely to return to their old haunts. I wonder if that's likely.
You know, the economic impact studies that I have seen, so the one from the state of Missouri a while back, their estimates use something like 40% of visitors from being outside of the state. So when you talk about those kind of numbers in terms of visitors, that's the net effect. And I mean, that's the challenge of doing any kind of economic impact study is to partition out that portion that is not wouldn't have been spending money in the area anyway. And so when you talk about 40% of visitors coming to Ballpark Village that are from outside the state, then that's a significant amount of new money coming in.
Sure. Bill, have you put together any numbers with regard to economic impact, what your projections might be?
Well, our our approach to the financing was that it was all privately financed except for a bond issuance that was an $18 million amount that helped with all the infrastructure work. As you know, we were on the site of the old stadium, and a lot of site work needed to be done to improve to get it up to, you know, where there's utilities and streets and so forth. That $19 million bond issuance that, by the way, the Cardinals and Cordish Company purchased all those bonds, is serviced by incremental tax revenues of the project. The city and state receive immediate tax revenue, but a portion of that new immediate revenue goes to service these bonds, and they're the bonds are only serviced by those revenues, and if those revenues don't occur, the bonds won't pay off. So that's the approach to it, and underlying that whole bond was were assumptions by Development Strategies, who was our consultant, which projected that, you know, the percentage of net new and all of that that underlined those, and they were the basis for why there was subsidy to be allowed in the project.
I'm going to take a moment now to talk to one of the brand new tenants at Ballpark Village. That would be Drunken Fish. It's already got a significant presence here in St. Louis and in Kansas City. Joining us by phone is Moonsak So, president and CEO of Drunken Fish. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I have to believe you're pretty excited about this new opportunity.
You know, we're ecstatic. I mean, it's been kind of a crunch getting everything done to get open tomorrow, but, you know, it's been busy, that's for sure.
Will you be open tomorrow? I was somehow under the impression it was going to take a while for you to be ready to go.
You know, we will be open tomorrow for sure.
Why did you decide to get in on this project?
You know, this was a long time coming deal that, you know, this Ballpark Village was supposed to happen a long, long time ago. And when we were just opening up the landing location, Cordish people was inquiring about Drunken Fish in Ballpark Village way back in the day. And we weren't ready for it, you know, at the time. But because of the conversations, they were opening a power and light district in Kansas City. And because of that opportunity, we ended up visiting that market in Kansas City and falling in love with what they were doing out there with the Power and Light District.
You know, there's been some discussion here that, based on a front page article in the Post-Dispatch today, some concerns over a dress code, that it might be in some ways discriminatory. You have an operation in Kansas City. Have you found that to be the case out there?
You know, I think a lot of people have been asking me about that, and the second question is, you know, are we going to have any issues in this area with it? And you know, one thing about the way Cordish runs their business and Power and Light, and I have firsthand because I've been there for 3 years, is it's top notch. You know, we get great clientele to come through. They try to make it a family environment to where everybody's kind of welcome. And really, there is no dress code issues that I've experienced out in the 3 years that I've been out there.
Well, I'm sure Bill and Brett here are happy to hear you say that. Moonsak So, I want to thank you for being with us, however briefly. Good luck to you. I know you've got a lot of work to do to be ready to go tomorrow. Thank you so much for being
excited.
With us.
We're very, very excited.
Bill, that's encouraging to hear what he has to say, isn't it?
It is, and I think, you know, that's also what I've heard from Cordish, that these incidents of dress code, which they happen once in a while, it's a very objective dress code that they enforce. There's zero color issues with it. It's very objective, and they hire a third-party firm to do it for them. So the vast majority of people get in. And it's only when somebody trips up on the specific code that that they go back and usually change and come right back in.
All right. Well, let's take a couple of phone calls. As time allows, we'll begin with Aaron calling from St. Charles. Aaron, thanks for being with us. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if you could discuss transportation needs and parking needs for both customers and people that work there, and then also security issues that might come up, considering some of those businesses are supposed to be open till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Will there be added safety or whether it be police presence or private security presence, and I'll listen off the air.
Okay, Bill, why don't you take that one?
Okay. Yeah, the first issue is transportation. We have a large parking lot, 800 cars adjacent to the venue that we control. And during lunch, it'll be free for with validation. And we're sort of working through the details of our validation policy in the evening. But so parking is great access. And beyond our lot, there's obviously additional great parking that services the stadium and will be available. As for security, you know, it's a very robust security budget. I mentioned our special events budget. Well, we also have a security budget. And that's one of the advantages of being a centrally organized development, is that we can hire in security, and all the tenants are on the same page and part of the lease process, that the landlord takes charge, the tenants all fall in line, and that's of the utmost importance in terms of venues. And that's also why there's a code of conduct within which is a dress code component that is enforced when things get into the evening hours that we've seen in some cases have caused problems around town. So it's of the utmost importance to us. We invest in the security privately, in addition to having a police substation support from the St. Louis Police Department and how it's how they handle things. And so it's a very coordinated effort on that front.
What's it going to cost to park in the area that you control?
Well, as I said, validation creates free parking for lunch, business. If it's a day game, though, it's a charge. You know, it's a baseball parking charge. And in the evening, we're working on the details. But there will be a validation process that would make parking pretty minimal as far as customers are concerned with validation.
Let's take another call. We'll bring in Mike calling from the city. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Hello, Don. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. You know, I was when you, earlier in the camp broadcast here, you said that people leave after the ball game. Well, I live in the city. I go downtown a lot. I go to a lot of baseball games, and I go down after the game. Places like the Oyster Bar, BB's, Mike Shannon's, Calico's, Molly's, all up in the Soulard area, all have people after the game down there. And I'm wondering why in the world would they build this thing when all they're going to do is erase a lot of those people's incomes? So if taking, you know, the small entrepreneurs has been around there for years trying to make a living, everything starts going good. Now the first thing that ballpark village people do is build a 120,000 square foot bar.
All right, Mike, thank you for the call. I think we might have addressed that. Brett, do you want to just repeat what you've said earlier?
Well, certainly the Ballpark Village offers a unique experience that your typical, you know, the Calco's or a Mike Shannon's restaurant doesn't provide. And those people that would want to see, you know, have a sit-down dinner at a Mike Shannon's are going to be able to do that. But I think Ballpark Village offers a different kind of experience that somebody from out of town especially is going to want to take in. So I agree that, you know, the establishments around the ballpark are usually full before or after a game, I don't see that being tailing off too much given Ballpark Village.
Time's getting away. I want to bring in John calling from Kirkwood. John, welcome to the program, but you got to say what you have to say in 30 seconds.
I'll be very quick. Mr. DeWitt, I've never had the chance to meet you, but I hope someday that I can meet you and shake your hand and thank you personally for everything that you've done, the St. Louis Cardinals, and now with Ballpark Village and for the city of St. Louis. I grew up listening to Joe Cunningham and Stan Musial. My kids grew up listening to the Cardinals. My son just named his newborn Stanley and his dog Lena after Mr. Molina. And that tradition, thanks to you, will continue to live, and I just really appreciate what you've done.
Well, thank you. That's very nice, and it's great to hear that. I know there are a lot of great, great fans that listen to this program and are getting excited about opening day, and all that tradition will continue, obviously, on the field this year. And I think just one point on the previous caller who's upset about sort of the competitive nature relative to the other existing bars is I just hope that person will come down and take a look over the next couple of weeks, because like Brett said, there's a unique offering here. It's different, and until you see it, you just can't quite visualize what this is all about. And so hope to see all the listeners down here in the next few weeks.
Well, Bill DeWitt, we want to thank you so much for being with us. I know this has been one heck of a project for you and your total involvement in it. We wish you the best of success with Ballpark Village. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, thanks, Don.
And Brett Boyle, thank you so much for being with us as well. We'll be watching what happens down there, won't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Brett Boyle, Bill DeWitt, thank you very much. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about the death penalty, pros and cons, in following last night's execution of an inmate here in the Missouri prison system. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.